Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. I'm Callum Stoneman. Tech Talk, of course, our weekly look at anything and everything related to technology from a blind and partially sighted perspective. If you've got any comments or if there's an app that you're using or something that you've found helpful, let us know. We always love to hear about it. It's your programme, so you can drop us an email, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk at rnib.org.uk. Coming up, we'll be hearing about some new arrivals into the RNIB shop. We'll hear more about the Evo S10 audio player. And one of our listeners will be taking us through their tech timeline. That's all coming up this week. Before we get into all that, though, the usual co-hosts joining me this week, Hubert Pavalkovic, Jackie Brown, and Natalie Curran. Let's see what's grabbing everyone's attention this week. Hubert, I'll start with you.
So for those who are unfamiliar about the 11 Reader app, this app allows you to read text using AI-created very natural voices, in fact. Now, you can either upload a text file to the app, or you can put text into a text field in the app and get it read out. I think we've done a demo of this quite a while back here on Tech Talk, going back to 2024. There's been an update, however, to this, which I'm really happy about. So I love books, mainly audio books, but some books that I want to read from certain authors are only available, for example, on Kindle. And I don't mind that, that's fine, but it means up until this point I had to read them with a screen reader, which I don't mind, but I don't particularly like it, and I don't really feel I can engage with a book with a screen reader reading it to me. So now, the update to Kindle is you can actually set this up and log in with your Kindle account into 11 Reader and be able to read your Kindle books with 11 Reader using any of their natural voices, if you like. And the good thing is you don't have to pay for this. You can get up to 10 hours of reading a month. So if that's all you need, then the free plan will suit you fine. There are additional subscriptions you can get which allow you to do more reading, depending on what suits you best. But you get 10 hours for free and you can read your Kindle books with the natural voices.
It's nice. I really like 11 Reader. Those voices are just, they're so good. I know we've had the discussion before about AI reading books and reading content, and I still always prefer a human voice wherever possible, but it's kind of weird. These voices are getting really close now.
I think human is always best because they give you that natural character voices and expressions, which although the natural AI voices are great, they don't do character voices. I think there's still, to me, a benefit of human reading a book. But AI is that kind of in-between where it's not as good as a human, but it's nowhere near as robotic as a screen reader. So therefore, it makes it a more enjoyable experience.
I think the only issue I've got with 11 Reader is I'm not a massive book person, but I do like to drop articles in there. You know, if there's a news article or something that I'm interested in and I want to read it while sort of doing something else, like you said, it's nicer than having it read through voiceover. But I always find, like, I don't know if any of you have tried this, and this might be more of an Apple thing than an 11 Reader thing, it probably is, but I always find it a bit of a pain trying to get articles into 11 Reader from Apple News. I always just get an error whenever I try and bring them in. So I always have to kind of share it, and then, well, you click on share, then there's open in Safari. So I click that. That then opens it in the original sort of publication site. Then you do share again, and then you can go into 11 Reader. And if you're lucky, and if that site is compatible, then it will bring it in. But I don't know if you guys have had this or if there's an easier way of doing that.
I've never used 11 Reader, but that sounds a bit complicated.
It would be nice if there was an easier way of doing it. I'm quite surprised that you can't just share it directly.
But to be fair, that's me using it for that. If you try and bring, say, like most web pages will read, and obviously books, it is brilliant for books. It is really good. Well worth checking out, that one. Jackie, What's going on with you this week?
Okay, so hymns or Selvis, whichever you know them as, that I often find a company when they change their name to something else, the first name tends to stick. But anyway, they have brought out a new upgrade to the BrailleSense 6, and this is 3.2. But the interesting thing about it is that it works now with the DotPad X, which is the multi-line display from Dot Incorporated. And they have partnered with HIMSS or Selvis to make the DotPad work. So essentially, you pair the two, your BrailleSense with the DotPad. And at the beginning, when I first heard about this, I thought, why are they doing this? You know, it's a Braille device. Why are they doing it? But actually, I know why they're doing it. It's because it gives you options with the DotPad. And if you have a BrailleSense 6, it means that you can write on the BrailleSense 6. You can enter text. You can use graphics and calculations and things. And they come off on the DotPad, which gives you the multi-line aspect of it. And that's actually quite good, because if you add the two prices together of a BrailleSense 6 and a DotPad, you're essentially paying the same price as you would for a Monarch, which is a standalone device and has Braille input and all the graphics and things. So I can see why they've done it, but it does work. I've been beta testing it for a while. And it is really good that if you go into the BrailleSense 6 menus, you can feel all the icons on the DotPad, or you can have text instead of all the menu items. And of course, you can write on the BrailleSense 6 and it will come up on the DotPad. So it is good for people that have one or the other. And if you're lucky enough to have both, then that is quite a good combination. The other aspect of it, this upgrade, is that apparently now you can use all the Zoom voice recorders. You can use those as external devices on the BrailleSense 6. And of course, there are sort of bug fixes and up-to-dates on those as well.
That's very nice. Yeah, I like that. This all goes back to education, doesn't it? Like, again, the BrailleSense 6 is really popular in education, and then the DotPad as well, because that's my thing with the Monarch. Like, it's a great device, but it's, you know, we've spoken before about the price, and then you would probably need something else, like you said, for your just general word processing or doing like internet research or whatever it is you need to do. So it's nice having these two in combination. I think that sounds quite cool.
Yeah, it does make sense. I mean, the Monarch, you can do email. It has an email client. It has a word processor. It is standalone, but it also has the multi-line for all the graphics, and it does work with your screen reader. But to have the combination, a lot of people would have a BrailleSense 6, and some people would have a DotPad. So it kind of does split the two things up. It means that you can, you know, you do have options. So it does work, though. It's really good that, particularly for students who are doing maths. So if they're doing maths on their BrailleSense 6, then all the equations and everything will come up on the DotPad, which gives you multi-line Braille, which is really good for math.
It's nice to know that it's getting updates as well. That was one of my concerns with the BrailleSense 6, because it's, I can't remember what version of Android it's running.
It's 12.
Android 12, yeah. So that was my concern, yeah, that updates would be quite limited, because that is a very old version of Android now.
Yeah, and the 7's coming out as well. The BrailleSense 7 is coming out apparently at the end of September, I believe. And
okay,
that is also going to probably work with the DotPad and things, but it's going to be Android 15. And it's still not up to speed with the latest version of Android. It's okay if you don't use Android. If you're happy using the, you know, the BrailleSense kind of layered software applications, if you want to just stick with those and you don't want to go into Android, that's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, to pay all that money for a device that really doesn't have an up-to-date operating system. We've talked about it before. It's the same argument, really. The cost is very prohibitive.
Yeah. Interesting updates there, though. Yeah, good to hear about that. Natalie, what have you got?
I've got two very small things this week. So one's something I've been thinking about for a while, thinking, should I mention it on the show? Should I not? Is it too small? But I thought, might as well, because I do find it useful. If you are booking trains or looking at train times on, as far as I can tell, pretty much any train platform, so Trainline, Nearly Departed, Cross Country, whichever app it is you're using, if you're like me and you find that, yes, you have your normal routes, but you also travel to other places relatively regularly and get fed up having to sift through everything. And I think just as a vision impaired user, you just feel having to type and search for everything a lot more than if you're sighted. You know, I think sighted people are a lot happier than I am, generally speaking, for example, to write out a long email on their phone. I'd much rather wait till I got home and do it on a laptop. But anyway, what I've noticed, and I've done it for years, is if you listen to, when you find the train station you want, if you listen to the bit at the end, it will usually say, sometimes it's in brackets, sometimes it's not, three letters. And that is that train station's sort of unique code, if you like. And you can search by that instead of the full address. So, for example, Glasgow Central is GLC. Edinburgh Waverley is EDB. I think London Euston is EUS. And King's Cross is KGX. And I think the advantage is that you're never going to get the combination KGX in a normal word. So just by typing those three letters, you actually get directly to the station you want. Rather than if you started typing London, you're going to get at least half a dozen train stations that you still need to sift through.
I've been told I'm a very sad individual for remembering this, so thank you, Natalie, for actually making me feel much better about this. I've been using these codes since 2014, and if you're going, you're sad for knowing all these, Hereford, HFD, Birmingham New Street, DHM, London St Pancras, STP, thank you very much. It is a lifesaver, and I'm glad I'm not the only one that likes this. I don't feel sad anymore.
But it's even like not knowing how to spell some places sometimes. Yeah. I mean, on the whole, it's not too bad. But sometimes I kind of think, I'm sure I'm typing this in right, but I can't
find it.
Find what I want. Or I start typing it thinking, oh, there won't be many options that start, I know, EXH, and then you get 20 options. You're thinking, flip sake. Yeah. So, yes.
Yeah.
Something I thought we might not have noticed.
I had that with, I've got a family member who lives in Derby, and I never knew. Until I was trying to find it to book a train down there to go and see him, I never knew that it was spelled D-E-R.
Mm.
And I was trying to find, I could not for the life of me find Derby train station. It's because I was putting an A in.
Yeah, because of that, logically you kind of go D-A-R-B-O. Okay, it's not that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's quite useful to know that.
And the other thing I noticed this week, and this, so the trains I've been using for years, but the... this is a new discovery on me, and I can imagine lots of listeners laughing at me right now, but I'll say it anyway, is a Samsung TV. It comes with the default Samsung TV app. And I've always been a bit confused by it in the sense of when I turn the TV on, it will start auto-playing whatever channel it's on. But it seems to pick them at random. So for a long time, I was getting Mr. Bean, which is a very un-VI-friendly show. I've had America's Next Top Model. I've had a Following the Kardashians or Keeping Up the Kardashians, whatever it's called. And I thought, what is this? How do I work this? And every now and again, I have looked at it, but not given it any thought particularly. And what it seems to be is if you do the left arrow, if you go back a step into the menu, as it were, what you seem to find is a bit of a list of shows. And when you find the show you want, instead of it being an on-demand service of you pick the show you want to watch, it's just that show of sequential episodes kind of on all the time. So, for example, at the moment, what I did actually find, and this was deliberate as opposed to being subjected to whatever Samsung decided I should watch, was The Hotel Inspector. And when I turned it, when I got to it, it was halfway through an episode. I waited for that episode to end. And then the next one just started two or three minutes later, and it just keeps going around. But you know, it's not a repeat. It's different episodes and possibly even different variations of the same show. But yeah, it was a moment of discovery for me, so I thought I'd share it.
I have always wondered about that app, like what that actually is, because we've got a TV in our bedroom, just a small one, which is a Samsung TV, but we've not got an aerial connected to it because we just use it for on-demand stuff, you know, like Netflix and things. But when I first got it, I turned it on, and as you said, because they are basically live TV channels that Samsung have provided, but I plugged it in and turned it on, and this Samsung on mine, I think it's like Samsung Smart Hub or something, or Smart TV, but I was like, especially before I turned on Voice Guide, I was like, where the hell are these channels coming from? There's nothing plugged in. This is weird. But I never really realised how to use it as well. I just turn it on and go straight to Netflix. So,
well, that's what I've always done, Callum. Occasionally I've looked at it and thought, this is confusing, don't get it, come back. But yes, for whatever reason, one night this week I decided, let's have another go.
Yeah, might have a look at that next time we use it. By the way, this is completely off topic, but since we're talking about TVs, Huber, you got called a sad individual for remembering train codes. When I was younger, and I've no idea why this was, I used to have a real knack for memorising the channel numbers. You know, I've got Sky and Freeview and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Disney Channel was on 609.
Yeah.
Shockingly, I mainly remember the sports channel.
What a surprise. I think 401 was it for Sky Sports? Like the main
That's
Sky
Sports. Right. Yeah.
Don't know how I used to remember those, but yeah, I did. I was quite good for that.
Well, it's easier when you can't see to be able to just type in the code.
Yeah.
You know, my childhood, we didn't have a TV that could talk, but I knew that Disney Channel and Disney Channel Plus were 609 and 610. That's what I watched.
It was brilliant when you'd have like family members over, or they my dad would just be sat there scrolling the TV guide. I was like, what? Looking for something in particular. And that's right. Give it here. What channel's it on? Just put in the number. There you go. Job done. Well, there's another partnership with Be My Eyes. They have now partnered up with NatWest, this is quite UK specific, so NatWest being one of our main banks here in the UK. This is actually like a trial. So they're running a partnership with NatWest with a limited group of users at the start, just to kind of see how it goes. Now, such is the way of the technology world. Obviously, this show goes out on a Tuesday, and this came out Monday last week, so the day before that our show went out. So it may already be filled up, but if you're interested in trying this out, you can email, and this is in the newsletter as well. If you email Andy Lane at Be My Eyes, he seems to be the guy who's managing this. So that's andy.lane@bemyeyes.com. He seems to be the one managing this. So if you email him, let him know that you're interested. And if there's still spaces, then they can get you on the list. So this is where NatWest staff will be able to help you out with anything you need. So whether it's like reading your statements or your mail that you've had from them, navigating the branches, using the ATMs, they can help you with all that kind of stuff, which is nice because, I mean, I've always gone to IRA for things like that, but as far as I'm aware, they don't have any direct partnerships with the banks, you know, to get the bank staff. And that's always been something that you shouldn't really use Be My Eyes for because of the whole volunteer aspect. But you can actually, you're soon going to be able to get their staff on there as well, which is really nice. And they're the first bank to partner up with Be My Eyes, actually. I didn't realise that.
I suspect they might be the first of many for exactly that reason, Callum. Like,
I hope
the security aspect of that is very attractive, because that's always been my concern with Be My Eyes, that some of the stuff that I might want somebody to read could be very private. But if you know, like you say, if you've got something that's come through in a non-accessible format from your bank and you can phone your bank's officials, that sounds a lot more attractive than, like you say, just doing it on a random helpful volunteer.
Yeah, so As I said, it's a trial partnership at the minute. They've got a limited group of users that they're giving access to. But I can't see this not opening up, to be honest. Like, I'd be very surprised if this trial period doesn't extend into a public partnership. So either drop an email to Andy Lane, or just keep an eye out in the service directory, really, on Be My Eyes. I'm sure it will appear, and we'll give you more about it as we hear more. Well, another busy week for us, as always. Stick with us. This is Tech Talk.
We are opening up the doors to the RNIB online shop again here on RNIB Connect Radio, as I'm joined by Charlie Jarvis, RNIB Shops Buying Coordinator, to highlight some of the great products that you all find by going to shop.rnib.org.uk/connect. Hi, Charlie, and how are you?
Hi, Toby. Very good, thanks.
We have some fantastic news, as now available in the RNIB online shop is a range of the Synaptic Ray-Ban Meta Smart Glasses. The Meta glasses have been found to be really useful for us all as visually impaired people, not only for making hands-free, I suppose, phone calls and video calls, but also for using to connect with a Be My Eyes volunteer to reading out restaurant menus and many other things, which we'll come to in a moment. But Charlie, do give me a bit of an overview of the types of Meta Ray-Ban glasses that are now available in the RNIB online shop, as there is quite a range of styles and types of lenses too.
Absolutely. So just to give a bit of an overview about the glasses and what they do. So they basically combine the classic Ray-Ban frame with a built-in camera, microphone and speakers. And then they connect via Bluetooth to the Meta app on your smartphone. So that can be Apple or Android. And then you can use the helpful voice controlled features. They have an open ear speaker in each arm and 5 microphones for voice control and making calls. And you can also adjust the speaker volume and answer calls using the touchpad on the right arm of the glasses as well. And there is also a capture button to take a photo and to start and stop recording, but you can also do that with your voice. So we have a lot of different frame options available to choose from, different lenses as well. So we have matte black frames with clear lenses. We have the shiny black frames with the sun lenses. And then we've either got matte black or shiny black frames with the transition lenses, which are great for sort of going from inside to outside in the sunny weather. And then we also offer a charging case for them and a training package as well. So yes, there's something out there for everybody. And there's just so many fantastic things that they can do.
And obviously the great thing about the Synaptic Meta Ray-Ban glasses is that they do come with 12 months of help and support too, which I think is also available to visually impaired people who have Meta glasses, even if they have not bought them through the RNIB online shop. Is that right?
Absolutely, yes. So if you do purchase them via the online shop, you'll get free training for the first year. Then if you wanted to take up more training after that, if you're still not feeling confident, or equally if you brought them from somewhere else but you're not getting the most of your features and you'd like some support from Synaptic, the support plan is £39 a year. It is completely optional, so you don't have to have it. As I say, the first year is free if you get them from us, but if you don't, that plan is there that you can purchase from us should you want some extra support.
And that's great, because sometimes with new technology, you get it and use it, and then sometimes down the line, you might have, you know, maybe some issues or problems that you want to sort of talk with somebody about. And I think it's great having that support available, because we know what new technology is like. You do get problems from time to time, don't you?
Absolutely. And aside from the problems, there might even be features on there that you haven't figured out exist, or you're not quite sure how to make the most of them. So it's just about, you know, getting the most out of the product in all the situations you might be able to use it.
Well, I've had a pair of the Oakley Meta glasses for about a year now, and I do find them incredibly useful for many reasons. And I suppose the main one for me is making hands-free phone calls and video calls when I'm out and about with my guide dog. I can use Meta glasses to find out what's in front of me, so I can say to Meta, hey, Meta, what's in front of me? Or take a photo and describe it so I can find out if there's a person in front of me, if my guide dog started to slow down a bit. Is that why? kind of thing. Obviously, you know, sort of be careful that AI is not 100%, but at least it gives you that sort of, I suppose, bit of confidence as well. And I use them a lot around the house, you know, for looking at products in my fridge to get an idea of the sell-by dates and that kind of stuff. I've used them to make video calls with family and friends when I've lost things in the house, when I've lost my AirPods and I can't find them and I'm on my hands and knees trying to find them. And I, you know, better to make a video call with a family friend and ask them, you know, please help, can you find my AirPods because I can't find them. So I've used them for that, and I've used them for working out what colour my clothes are and that kind of stuff, and so many other things. And I think, you know, the great thing about the Meta glasses is that it's all hands-free. And I know you can do a lot of the things that I've talked about using your smartphone, but the thing about being hands-free is that you don't have to have your smartphone in one hand and the object you want to describe in the other hand. So it just makes it really useful. And I've used them out and about to take photographs and videos and things like that of my guide dog free running and things like that. So I find them incredibly useful. And as I say, you know, sort of people who've used them for reading restaurant menus and stuff and things like that. You can also use them to read out your messages as you're out and about and reply to your messages by dictating the reply as well. So there's so many uses for the Meta glasses. And also, just to be aware that your glasses, like any, you know, type of sunglasses, might be a little bit fashionable and stuff. Just be careful that you don't knock them about a little bit, because the Meta glasses do have all that technology in them. I have the transition lenses in my Oakley Meta glasses, which are great when I'm out and about and the sun's out, as they do go a little bit dark. Charlie, we must also mention that if people order prescription lenses for their Synaptic Ray-Ban Meta glasses through the R&IB online shop, but they will need to make an appointment with the R&IB Low Vision Clinic in our Grimaldi building in London. And of course, your Meta glasses are no replacement for your guide dog or white cane. And talking about the sunshine, now available in the R&IB online shop is a range of the eye shades too.
Absolutely, yes. So we've got a new and improved design on these that blocks out light and can help to relieve eye strain. So they're a more comfortable and more durable design, because some of the feedback we received is that, you know, people are taking them on and off all the time, depending on where they are. And they wanted something a bit more robust, but also a bit more fashionable. So along with the colour tints that you're used to, we now have a range of different frame options to choose from. And that includes a plain black frame, a brown tortoiseshell frame and a grey tortoiseshell frame as well, along with the standard tints that you're used to. So options include grey, amber, orange, yellow and green. Depending on what you use them for, obviously it's different for everybody, and we do advise sort of checking before you buy what is going to be most suitable. But yes, they are all available now to order from the online shop and via our helpline.
Well, to find out more about the Synaptic Ray-Ban Meta glasses, along with the help, training and support, plus the eye shades and many more products that you will find in the R&IB online shop, do go to shop.rnib.org.uk/connect. Well, thank you so much indeed, Charlie, for chatting with me again here on R&IB Connect Radio and telling me more about the Synaptic Ray-Ban Meta glasses and the eye shades.
Thank you.
So with me today is Martin Lawler. Hi, Martin. You're very welcome.
Thank you very much, Jackie, for having me on the podcast. I love listening to you and Callan and Natalie and Hubert as well.
Well, thank you very much for that. That's brilliant. I'm glad you enjoy it. So, Martin, I believe you have bought the Evo S10, which is the latest player in the Evo family. Can you tell us about the Evo S10, Martin, and can you describe it?
Yeah, so the Evo S10 is like, it's like a cell phone. It's very small, and the battery is built into it, and there is about 15 buttons on the player, and it has 64 gigs of internal memory. It can take up to a terabyte SD card. It has an FM radio. It has internet radio, podcasts. And the reason why I like it is because the speaker and the quality of it is just amazing, I think. And it's great for recording as well.
Okay, so
You have other players as well, don't you, Martin? So
I do.
Yeah. Okay. So what other ones do you have?
I've got the Sense player. I've got the Orbit player. I've got the Victor Reader Stream 3. And I've got my first E10 as well. But what I like about the E10 players is just the sound quality of the speaker. I think they're great for listening to audio content. And the reason why I like the S10 is because it's the only player that you can record an episode of a podcast on the player itself.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I guess that because you're an audio fan, you listen to podcasts, you like your books or music, you want different players to do different things. And I guess that they all do different things in a way. Why you have them all?
Yeah, definitely. The S10, it's very stable. It also has Bluetooth and you can record from the FM radio as well, and you can record from the internet radio. They just updated the internet radio application and the podcast application. Daniel from VinVision, I've been emailing him and asking him, so they've done it now. The player is based on Android. You hold the power button in for 5 seconds on the player, and then it's coming on here now.
So what voices does the player have, Martin? Because a lot of people are quite particular about their TTS engine. So which voices does this one have?
Okay, so it has the Evona voices or Arona voices. It's got Ava, Mascom.
That's the, I think that's the Vocalize, what used to be Vocalizer voices. I understand.
And it's very clear, and also has got a compass on it, and has got 5 alarm clocks, and has got a voice memo feature and a voice reminder feature on it as well. So it really is a compact little player.
Yeah. And also the, as you say, the podcast and the internet radio applications have been updated. They used to use VTuner, which I must confess I wasn't a fan of it. But I believe now that they take their podcasts and their internet radio streams from iTunes. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it's iTunes they're using. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, which does give you a lot more choice than VTuner used to do.
Yeah, definitely. And it's very quick at downloading podcasts as well. And the battery life is very good on it. It takes about 2 hours to fully charge it. Like the Orbit player is very good also, but this doesn't drop. This tells you the right percentage of the battery level.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting. It's good to know that there are other devices on the market as well as the Stream and the Sense player and, of course, the Orbit player as well. And we mustn't forget, you might not have it, but there is a milestone as well. So there are, you know, 4 or 5 decent players out there now, and they all do some things the same, but it is fair to say that some of them do perhaps 1 or 2 things better. So what's the price of this, Martin?
I think it's £249 from Aspire Consultancy or Steve in the UK. But it also can read PDF files, and it can also play video files as well. And it can play any type of music file. And I just really like, I know the battery is built in and that, but I just really like the speaker on it. The speaker is very high quality. I think it's about 10% higher than the last Evo E10. So it has the App Store. Like, it's very easy to update the player. Now, I don't know in the future whether it will allow you to put on your own apps, but I don't know whether that's coming down the track or not, but hopefully they would. Because I know, I think the Orbit player are going to let you install third-party apps. I know they've installed Bard on the Orbit player now.
Well, thank you very much for that, Martin. That's a very interesting...
Thank you very much, Jackie.
Yeah, it's a very interesting player. And if anybody wants more information, they can contact us at techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or you can contact Aspire Consultancy, where Graham Longley is a reseller, and also Steve Nutt of Computer Room Services. So there are a couple of dealers in the UK. And thank you very much, Martin.
Thank you very much, Jackie. Thank you.
Let's have a look at a couple of your emails that we've had in then. Michael has been in touch. Hi, team. I'm having some problems while using RNIB's Reading Services website. I use the website to download books onto my Victor Reader stream. Now, every page that I go onto, I have to select my cookie preferences before I'm allowed to go any further, which I'm finding extremely frustrating and annoying. I've been told I could try using Easy Reader on my PC and download books that way. Is that easy to do? And please could one of you do a demo of using this method? Thanks for that, Michael. It's the whole thing with the cookie message coming up, I'm not experiencing that. I did do some testing. I get it when I first land on the website, but I mean, in my case, I always kind of reject the cookies wherever I can, or like essential cookies only, whatever that option is. I click that and then it seems to go away. Now, I'm using Edge on my PC. Be interested to know what browser you're using, because that could be to do with it. I mean, I use Edge pretty much all the time now. I don't think I've even got another browser installed, to be honest. But I'm not having it. I don't know if you guys have got any thoughts on this one.
I use Chrome primarily. And I think I accepted the... Well, no, I rejected the cookies on that page. And I don't think I've seen it since. But to be honest, of late, I've not been on there too much. But I'll have another look and see. But it's Chrome I'm using, which, to be fair, is pretty similar to Edge in the way that it's laid out. Different, obviously, giant companies. Google is, yeah, Chrome. Edge is Microsoft. But yeah, maybe try it with a different browser and see whether that works.
Something I was going to say is, and I don't know about this website in particular, so it might not be an option, but I know there's something similar with the government websites, you know, doing access to work. And what I did discover is sometimes you can just ignore it.
Yeah.
So although it prompts you on every page, you can just keep going. Sometimes that's not an option. You know, you'll try and do something on a website and then realize that the reason you can't do it is because you've not accepted or rejected cookies. But for some of these websites, you can just ignore it and get on with your life.
They are becoming more intrusive now, though. Has anybody noticed that?
Yes.
That, yeah. You know, they are just everywhere now, and it is really, it's really difficult to sometimes get rid of them or sometimes reject them. If you don't accept them, then you very often can't you proceed on that website. And I just refuse, so I just back off and go somewhere, find another website that does something similar.
Yeah, I must admit, I'm similar. The ones that annoy me, I don't mind when you've got like a accept or reject, so I don't mind those. The ones that annoy me are where they say like select your preferences, and then you get about 800 checkboxes that you need to select, which no one knows, yes, what they mean. Even me, I'm into this stuff and I don't have a clue, yeah, what it's talking about. In that instance, I'm like, all right, whatever, just accept. But yeah, Easy Reader on Windows is not bad. I always forget that there's a Windows app for it. But yeah, I've done some playing around. It's it's pretty good. So yeah, I probably could put together a bit of a demo of that. That does work quite well. I hope that helps in the meantime anyway, Michael. And yes, we will try and do something on doing it through the Easy Reader app, because that does seem to be quite good. We've also had an email in from Barry, who wants to talk about spreadsheets. He says, hi team, I've just been playing around with spreadsheets and JAWS 2026. While in a table and on an entry, you can press F2 and it will allow you to use your arrow keys. Moving around the spreadsheet, I just press the arrow keys, no need for Control and Alt. And if I need to go into an entry or make a change to it, I press F2, and when I've finished with it, I press Enter, and it will close and move me to the next line below. Thanks, Barry. I think this comes off the back of a conversation we had a few weeks ago about navigating tables using the arrow keys or the Control-Alt arrow keys. I don't know if he's talking about Excel there, which, yeah, that's the way it works in Excel.
In Excel, I think you can use either just pressing the up, down, left, right arrow keys, or you can hold down Control and Alt to do it. I think both, technically speaking, work. Obviously, just pressing the arrow keys is easier. And I think the distinction there is that Excel is actually a grid as opposed to a table. Don't know what the technical difference is, but I know they do behave in slightly different ways. And the expectation is that in an Excel sheet, you should only have very small amounts of text, like the label of a column, as opposed to a table in Word where you might have slightly longer responses, perhaps a list of questions down one column and a list of answers down the other. And that's where the distinction between Control-Alt and arrow keys to move between the rows, and then using the arrow keys themselves to move between lines of text, is useful. But in Excel, they both behave the same way because it's a different format. And the F2 comment, you can use F2 to edit a cell entry if you realise you've typed the wrong thing in, or if there's a formula in there and you want to see what that is. And I think visually you can see that on screen, or you can sometimes see a preview on screen. And sometimes you'll see that if you're using a Braille display. But JAWS won't automatically read that out because, frankly, I don't think you'd ever want it to, because the whole point of a formula is that it's hidden, you just see the results. And then you can press Escape if you want to just read it and not edit it. Or, as Barry rightly says, you can edit it and then press Enter, which will both save the changes and move you to the row below.
Yeah, so that's Excel. For general tables, like say you're on a website or you find a table, I think Word works in a similar way, where you've got to use the Control and Alt keys, and that will navigate you through the specific cells.
Yeah, it does.
Within the table. But if you just do your arrow keys in there, that will still move you like usual navigation methods, like character by character. It is confusing, though it works differently in different places.
I suppose a good thing with Excel is, if you are happier just remembering that Control-Alt is how you navigate a table, it will still absolutely work in Excel. So if you find it confusing to switch between the two, then stick with that one and it will always work, or it should always work if the table's been coded correctly.
I still love, you don't need this in Excel. I don't know if it works in Excel, but for general tables, like I said, say in a website or something, or in an email, if there's a properly formatted table, I still love that table layer thing. So JAWS key, space, and then T. And then you can use your arrow keys in the same way there that Barry's talking about, to just move through the different cells. You don't need Control and Alt in there as well, and then Escape when you've finished. I love that way of navigating, mainly just because I'm lazy, to be honest, and you can do that one-handed. So, yeah, why not?
Not just lazy, sometimes it's practical. And, you know, if you have got a big table, it can almost get exhausting to, because you're literally holding down the Control-Alt keys the whole time. And that maybe sounds a bit ridiculous, but actually if you are interrogating something quite chunky, you can be there a while.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it can be a little bit, you could get, you'd have to be careful, I suppose, doing that long term. If you were doing that day in, day out, working with tables and using that method, it could end up causing a bit of RSI.
Yeah, potentially.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've not got RSI, but I think my laptop's down arrow key has.
Yes. Yeah, thanks for that, Barry. I hope that clarifies some things there. And if you've got anything that you want to share, if you've got any solutions for Michael's issue with the reading services website, or just generally anything, any more tips that you want to share, get in touch, techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
Now on RNIB Tech Talk, it's time to go, time travel of sorts. I'm talking about tech time travel. So it's our tech timeline feature where we talk to blind and partially sighted tech users who have used technology for all or most of their life and kind of take a bit of a journey, call it a technology story. Joining us today is Daniel Sykes. Daniel, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
So what I want to start with is, you know, in your early days, you were growing up with sight loss. You were born with sight loss. What was the first piece of assistive technology that you recall using that you really liked?
I would argue, I mean, my most basic one I had as a child was just a simple magnifier. It was one of these bar things that you'd move around the page. I found that quite useful. But then a few years later, I got, it was kind of like a little telescope type thing. I don't know what the technical term is, but you could twist it. And it was like a mini telescopic sight. And when I was in the classroom, I could use that and read the board. I looked a bit like a naval admiral at the time, but I did find it quite useful.
I used to have one of them. I used to like observing nature with them. With things. They were quite fun.
Yeah,
looking
absolutely.
At the trees and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it was mind-blowing how powerful the zoom was. Very effective. And I think soon after that, I probably linked to touch typing. You know, when I was about 7 years old or whatever, I was always terrible at sports and stuff. And my school had an agreement that rather than going to sports, my grandma would come in and teach me how to type on a keyboard. And I was really fast at touch typing. I still am. Because of those lessons I had with my grandma. And like for me, I think it's accessibility in the sense that it opened the window of the digital world and how I could thrive and using technology rather than being forced to compete on someone's terms. You know, I wasn't very good at all the kind of football and all the sports stuff that school did, and now I was presented with an arena where I felt like I wasn't constrained because on computers I could enlarge the screen quite effectively, and I found it much easier to access information using technology.
I used to hate touch typing, and I think a lot of blind and partially sighted people at the time hate learning it, but later down the line, we look down on that as probably one of the most important skills that we would have learned ever, I think, especially in the days where computers are so relevant. Now, if I look at my past, okay, I didn't like touch typing at the time, but I'm so grateful to have learned it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and the other thing, I mean, it's not really accessibility, but I loved video games as a kid. I mean, a lot of kids did. I still do. but for me, like when I got my first N64, like video games were so important for me because whilst I struggled to compete in all the sports that kids usually play on, for me, that was a really good form of escapism as well and getting into gaming.
When it comes to assistive technology, and it can be past or present, what would you say is your favourite piece of assistive technology?
My favourite piece is the small little magnifier that comes with Microsoft Windows. I use that every single day, and the thing I like about it is that when I do my work, when I work from home, I've got a big laptop. I usually kind of, I position myself in a way where the screen is close to my face, and I'm not necessarily on a desk. I kind of like rest it on my arm sometimes, and I use that Windows magnifier, and I blow it up to quite a large size, and because I'm so used to it, I'm so adept at like just moving that magnifier around quite efficiently, and that was just that's how I access most of my work, just by using that single magnifier. And I've used screen readers in the past. I think it's called Shark or something, but that was quite useful for a time. But then I just found that it was taking too long to read certain bits and pieces in my line of work because I was bombarded with all kinds of different systems, and the screen reader sometimes didn't catch up too well with it. So I ended up using the magnifier, and I just got so proficient in using it that it tackles most of my accessibility needs. And because of the nature of my role, I don't have to go through all kinds of text and every single day. Most of my role is out delivering for people and doing presentations and speaking to people. So I have less need for a laptop anyway.
When it comes to I'm going to open this up a bit. It can be technology in general or it can be assistive. What assistive or general technology is currently making the biggest difference in your life?
I mean, honestly, I would say it's just it's more of my mindset, I think. I think in recent years, I've began to realise there's many things that I struggled to do and I didn't realise I was struggling to do it. And at work, for example, you know, we have these cybersecurity tabletop games. So just for the audience, I work as a cyber protect officer for Surrey and Sussex Police, and I give cybersecurity awareness training to audiences and community groups and businesses. And one of the things that we do is this tabletop exercise where we essentially give the audience a budget and they've got to allocate cybersecurity resources to defend their business. And because it's a very physical and card-based game, I always struggled to see the cards and the text, and I wasn't able to access it properly. And for me, you know, I always hated asking for help on these kind of things. And, you know, I always kind of suffered in silence a little bit because I didn't want to cause a hassle with people. And, you know, one of the things I've learned now is that by adapting something, or even just asking the questions about adaption, you actually sometimes bring out some value never anticipated. So, for example, in this card game, whilst I struggled to access it, I've gone away and I've developed a fully digital version of this card game, which can be delivered to audiences at scale. And it's something that can be done remotely as well. And there's all kinds of benefits, and many audiences love it. But also, fundamentally, it's made it accessible for other visually impaired people, which are out there as well, besides me. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, that certainly helped me with accessibility. When it necessarily is a tech product, it's that mindset of, you know, we should be asking these questions. Like, is there anything in our daily lives that we can adapt to make more efficient for us? And often there's benefits to adaption that you never anticipate until you do it.
You often have these conversations with people about technology that you'd want to see revived, you know, old school technology that we want to bring back. So my question to you is, and again, assistive or general, what would be the bit of technology that you would love to see make a comeback?
Oh, good heavens. I'd say old sailing ships. Like, I'm a history buff, and I love, like, the 18th century, and I love the idea of, like, sailing around the world and, like, a big, fully rigged ship. I think that would be very cool. I love that kind of era in history. That would be my desire to go back to, is big rigged ships of the line. I think that's my thing.
I think you are the first one, when asked about technologies, to mention old school kind of ships and that sort of equipment and technology behind that.
I'm somewhat of a binary, because my mind's either in the past, in the 18th century or whatever, or it's thinking about cybercrime and cybersecurity and future tech. But me and my wife got married on the HMS Warrior in Portsmouth, which is an old ship as well. So history is, you know, it's an interest of mine, ironically.
Well, you've actually gotten us nicely to the future of technology. And you can make this cyber-focused, or you can make it assistive tech or mainstream tech-focused. It's a very broad question. What would you like to see? What are your hopes for the future of technology?
I think technology has the profound benefit of being somewhat of a great equalizer. Because of how technology has evolved, if you're incredibly resource-rich, it's very likely that you're going to get the same kind of smartphone or same kind of smartphone as someone who has limited resources. And I like that because, you know, that's something in historical terms. It equalizes people, I think, which is really, really positive. And I think that people have better access now to information. The fact that you have the sum of human knowledge accessible in your pocket, which can be communicated via an assistant, an AI assistant, to me, that is an unprecedented leap in human potential. And, you know, even in the 90s, I don't think anyone would have predicted, you know, what we have now. But that comes with benefits and also drawbacks as well. And I think one of the things I would want people to do is understand that whilst technology has all kinds of benefits, there are risks that we need to be aware of as well. And I think that's especially true of parents. There's a general lack of awareness about how important it is to protect our digital footprint, and especially the digital footprint of our children. And so whilst it's great in some regards that we are becoming a more digitally connected world, we also need to make sure that we keep ourselves safe as well. And I feel like sometimes there's a rush to adopt to technology and digitize everything. And sometimes the safety elements don't get as much attention as possible.
So what would you like to see in the future of technology? What would you like to see develop? What do you think the future of technology has in store?
I think that it's difficult to say. I think with AI, for example, people always say that AI is going to take your jobs and all this kind of stuff. I think that AI is majorly transformative in the sense that it will replace a lot of jobs that we do now. But what I would say is I think that we cannot predict what's going to happen in the future. And I think that throughout human history, when there's been mass leaps in technology, there's also been jobs created off the back of that. You know, the invention of the automobile created the car industry. You know, we all used to plow fields, and through innovation and growth, new jobs have been created. And then that's the same with today. Most jobs now didn't exist 50, 60 years ago. And I like to think that in the age of AI, you know, humanity will be living in a sense of abundance, but also I like to think that we have things to do as well. And I think, you know, humans need a purpose. And whilst AI and technology may make our lives very easy in some regard, my hope is that humanity has a purpose to it as well, and that we feel like we're having fulfilled and meaningful lives.
Fantastic. Daniel Sykes, many thanks for letting us explore your tech timeline here on RNIB Tech Talk.
Thank you very much.
And that is it from us for another week. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us. And as we always say, if you've got anything you want to share, anything that's working well or maybe not so well, we'd still love to hear about it. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is that all-important email address. Written messages or voice notes, always welcome. We'll be back with you, same time, same place, next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovic, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye for now.
Bye.
See you next week. Thank you.